and welcome to the MJA podcast. I am your humble host, Kate Swanell, and today we're talking hypertension. Specifically, we're talking hypertension guidelines. In 2017, the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association changed the threshold for the definition of hypertension in the general population down from 140 over 90 or more to 130 over 80 or more, increasing the prevalence of hypertension in US adults from 31.9% to 45.6% in one fell swoop. So what would happen if we did the same thing here in Australia? Professor Gary Jennings, Chief Medical Advisor to the National Heart Foundation, Executive Director of Sydney Health Partners, and a Senior Director of the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute, and a couple of colleagues, have written a perspective published in the MJA attempting to answer that very question. Gary is my special guest on the pod today. What is the Australian guideline definition of hypertension right now?
Well, the Australian guideline definition is a blood pressure of 140 on 90 or above.
Right.
And there are various classes of hypertension in terms of severity beyond that and below it. But that's been the traditional cutoff for some years now, not just in Australia but elsewhere.
So why did the Americans decide to lower it?
Well, we know that that the risk associated with blood pressure is an unbroken line. There isn't a particular inflection at any point. So committees can choose wherever they like, really, based on when they think risk is excessive. This particular guideline, though, was very much influenced by one study, the SPRINT study, which did show that targeting people and trying to get their blood pressure down below 130 on 80 was associated with benefit. It's a fairly controversial study in terms of its interpretation, but they've chosen to follow that
to go with it.
And
not everybody in the States agrees with that, do they?
No, the American College of Family Physicians didn't adopt it. They were, as anybody would, alarmed by the fact that it, because of the distribution of blood pressure in the US community, about half of the adult population would be defined as having hypertension.
Wow, and that is not a small number in the US, is it?
No, it's 30-odd million in the US, and it's, as you can see from our paper, we've done the sums here, and it's about 4.5 million Australians if we were to do this.
Right. So to make that clear, if we dropped our guidelines to 130 on 80, then you reckon there'd be an extra 2 or 3 million Australian adults? Yeah, 4.5 million extra Australian adults. Wow.
Yeah, it would be labelled with hypertension. And that's why in this paper we've addressed the issue of, you know, would that be inappropriate medicalisation of society?
Yeah.
Or is the problem that we've got a community whose blood pressure is too high anyway, and what would be the implications of that, even though, you know, making a new definition changes nothing, it has significant implications.
And what's your gut feeling? Is it medicalisation, or do we have a sleeping problem that at least lowering the threshold might draw attention to?
Well, we've got a sleeping problem irrespective of whether we change the targets or the definition at all, because we know that you know, two-thirds to almost three-quarters of people that have the existing definition of high blood pressure are not being adequately treated to ideal levels. And so even with what we've got now, we need to do more. We also know that in the general community in Australia, knowledge about high blood pressure as a very significant risk. It's the highest risk factor driving cardiovascular disease. It accounts for about a third of the cardiovascular disease in the community, and yet people don't understand that. There's a sense that high blood pressure is just another condition that you take some pills for because the doctor told you. You know, it may or may not be important down the track.
Is hypertension asymptomatic? I mean, is it really possible to go along with hypertension not knowing that there's anything wrong?
Yes, it's pretty rare to have symptoms directly due to high blood pressure these days. And, you know, people come along, because it's so common in the community, people come along with symptoms and high blood pressure, but the relationship between the two is seldom direct.
the Australian guidelines are going to stay the same. Was that a conscious decision when the American guidelines came out?
No, because the Australian guidelines anteceded the US guidelines.
Right.
But they were fortunate in the sense that the sprint study results were out at that time, so the committee was able to take that into account. And what was done was somewhere in between, actually, the sort of classical definitions and the way the US guidelines have gone, because our recommendation are if you've got people that were in the sprint study, whose blood pressure is being measured like in the sprint study, then that result holds and 130 on 80 is an appropriate level to consider the treatment.
I'm chatting today with Professor Gary Jennings from Sydney Health Partners and the Heart Foundation. Gary's co-authored perspective on hypertension guidelines can be found at mja.com.au. What would you do if you had a magic wand, Gary? Would you make hypertension symptomatic so that people know they've got it? Or do you just, what do we do, in other words, to raise awareness and to get people on the right treatment?
Yes, my magic wand would be to avoid it in the first place.
Yes.
I'd be taking a lot of salt out of the national diet.
Yeah.
And I would be helping people not gain weight as they get older. And I would be doing things to facilitate physical activity in their life, particularly in relation to urban design and other sort of systemic factors. This is one situation where, prevention is eminently doable and would pay off hugely.
Probably more than it's going to pay off dropping the threshold, I suspect.
That's right. Although dropping the threshold, our modelling suggests that out of those millions of people that would be picked up, a lot of them are young, most of them are young.
Yes.
And most of them you'd be actually recommending lifestyle changes anyway.
Right, rather than pharmacological ones, yeah.
And the minority would have indications for drug therapy, and that's, of course, not a bad thing. And there is an argument, I think, for starting earlier in life and getting people into good habits so they don't have to take pills later in life.
Is there any suggestion that there was any big pharma pressure on these American guidelines at all?
No, they were pretty assiduous with, they were led by the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology, and they're very, averse to industry interference in their recommendations. I think it followed best practice as far as trying to come up with a balanced view.
Yeah.
But, the evidence is always, there are always gaps in the evidence where committees have got to make a call on something or another. No two committees are always going to make exactly the same call. So that's why these guidelines vary a bit around the world.
How's the Australian state of play in terms of research on hypertension? Are there gaps here that we need to fill?
Well, as I said, at the population level, you can't be happy with how we're dealing with high blood pressure in our community.
Right.
Although we've seen, it's been a huge contributor, the fact that we have had effective treatment for lots of people.
Yeah.
It's been a huge contributor to the reduced rates of stroke and heart disease that we have seen over the last few decades. What we're expecting to see, in fact are seeing the early signs of, is some flattening off of that as people, as the community, A, ages, B, gets more and more overweight.
Yep.
And associated with that is higher rates of diabetes. And we know that one of the best things you can do for someone with diabetes is get their blood pressure down.
The whole medicalisation debate is interesting, because at what point does that medicalisation become a bad thing?
And
I don't know where that is. Do you have an inkling of when it tips over into being non-beneficial?
Well, I mean, medicalisation, immunising kids, you could never say it's not beneficial, 100% is better than 99%.
Exactly.
So it depends a bit on the issue that you're talking about. Scaring people unnecessarily, of course, is not a good thing, and that's where I think a lot of the problems come in when the actual diagnosis is fallible. You're labeling people with things they don't have, or when you're talking, as we are with blood pressure, about statistical risk. You know, your chances of getting this, 10 in 1,000, not 5 in 1,000. Firstly, it's hard to understand, and secondly, something that happens 1 in 1,000 times happens 1 in 1,000 times. And if that's you, then you think you've been done wrong by the...
And if it's not you, it's a fairly meaningless stat.
You think you've been under-medicalised.
Exactly. Thanks for your time, Gary. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Probably talk to you next week.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.